Let's stay curious, keep an open mind, and as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Welcome to Walsh Wednesday. On this week's episode, we speak with illusionist Ryan Dutcher. What incredible conversation. We span topics from our shared time in the radio industry, acting, philanthropy, and of course, magic. At the end of the day, Ryan shares that regardless of what he is doing at any given moment, he's an entertainer at heart. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, MHA of Dutchess County, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Dutchess Beer Distributors, Feldman, Kleiman, Collins & Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, VVash Med Spa and the Hudson Valley Ketamine Lounge, Prime Storage, and Walsh Valuation. Hey there, and welcome back to Walsh Wednesday. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and we got a great episode for you guys today. This one's kind of fun because we got two ex-radio guys here. So
true.
We do have, we can actually talk into microphones, so that's good. We got a skill right there. So that's really nice. That's convenient on my end. This guy is great. He's just coming from an event. Before getting over here, we'll talk about that in a second. So, busy guy. This is illusionist Ryan Dutcher. Really excited to have you. Ryan, how are you, my man?
Good. Thanks for having me. It's so good to see you.
It's good to see you as well.
I got to see you a couple weeks ago, but it's good. Before that, it was a while, so it's good to see you.
It's true. It has been a hot sec. We originally met when we were both in radio. Yeah. You at iHeart, me at Town Square, and then we both left radio, and we've branched out, and I like to think that we're both blossoming really, really well.
Yeah,
in those post careers.
I mean, as long as you feel that, I love every aspect of life, so I'm good.
There you go. I feel really good, and I just been following everything you've been doing. It just seems like keeps growing and growing and growing, which is awesome.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad that you're feeling that way. But yeah, and then I just saw you over at the Headless Horseman. You just had a run over there, kind of like a residency. Obviously, we're in the holiday season now, and that was the Halloween. But I definitely want to give you a moment to talk about that. What's that experience like having a residency over there?
It's great. It's my 14th year over there.
Wow, yeah. 14 now.
14 years. It's crazy. It's great because at every other show that I do, I load in and out.
Mm-hmm.
So there, after I'm loaded in, I show up with a backpack. Stays. And I leave with a backpack and I don't have to like bring everything in and set it all up. So that's been great. And believe it or not, they switch over to Christmas. They have a Frosty Fest. So not only do I do Halloween there, I do Christmas there as well. So from September to the end of the year, I get to kind of stay put for the most part.
I was going to ask about that if you're a part of the Frosty Fest.
Yeah.
That's cool
yeah.
You are. Now, with the Frosty Fest, if I have this correct, isn't that a drive-through experience?
Yeah, so there's a drive-through, then you park your car and then come into the attraction.
Okay.
So there's a few walk-through attractions. You get to meet with the big guy Santa. And then you can watch our show. And we do a themed Christmas show, which is a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, yeah, so you're not getting like a Halloween scene one or kind of generic thing. This is very holiday centric.
Is there anything
that you can tell us without like spoiling too much of the show?
I used to not like ever advertise or talk about it. This year's the first year that I'm really talking about it. But we create a show called Jingle and Jangle's Holiday Spectacular.
Ooh.
And that's how we got hired at Headless. My buddy and I, Mike, approached Headless in 2011, and they bought the show. And then they were like, hey, are you interested in doing Halloween? And I was like, well, you know, I don't really, you know, Halloween wasn't my thing, because I knew the previous illusionist there. And I was like, that's his thing. I don't want to take that. And they were like, well, he's not coming back, so... if you want it and it sweetens the deal, let's negotiate. It was a negotiating thing for them, which is great. I totally understand it. And I am forever grateful. And now I help with some of their illusions that people see when they're walking through and their lighting and some of the special effects stuff that happens.
That's really
very
cool.
Small part of it. But yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I would have figured you got started through Halloween first and then Christmas, not the other way around.
Yeah. Most people think that.
Yeah.
And yeah, we approached them with the Jingle and Jangle show and they were like, yeah, we'd love it. And they took us on and it was awesome. At that point, they had already had a stage show ready to go that they had created. And they were like, we don't really know. And we're like, we can do a show in a field. And basically, that's what we did. We made some platforms and we're down in a different section and just did the show a few times a night. And then the next year, we got upgraded to the stage. And the rest is history, 14 years later.
There we go. 14 years later. Incredible. So how long is Frosty Fest going out for?
It goes to the weekend up until Christmas. So I think that's the 22nd.
Sounds
dates
about right.
Tough. dates are tough.
Yeah, 21st, 22nd, something like that.
Oh, maybe
so
right.
You still got plenty of time to get those tickets. We'll make sure that we have that in the description of this episode. Definitely worth checking it out. I've seen his Halloween show along with a few other shows. I saw you at the mall a couple times too. I've seen a few things like that. He's fantastic at what he does. You will really be blown away. So, no, fantastic. That's really cool that you're doing that.
Yeah.
Might as well also mention what you're coming from and why you're wearing
Oh,
red
yeah,
today,
I don't
right?
always dress like this. Yeah. So I just came from...
The Go Red for
the
Women.
The Go Red.
Right?
I was like, where did I just come from? Thank you. I'm a lack of sleep. You're helping me. Yeah, Go Red for Women for the American Heart Association. And it's absolutely fantastic. So ran over there to help them raise some money real quick and then shot over here. So yeah, I've got crazy and my shoes are wild too.
Yeah, show them off. Fantastic.
Crazy shoes. So yeah, it's so fun. It's a lot of fun. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and everybody was wearing red and it was great. It's all for a good event. And
yeah, Go Red for Women. Fantastic, fantastic program. I've done a lot of work with the American Heart Association. I did a number of blood drives for them over the years, and actually we just produced a few commercials for them when they had their big heart walk this year.
Yeah.
So yeah, love working with them. Such a great charity. You're very busy. So you got the Illusionist, the Illusion performance.
So you got the Illusionist.
Call the show? What's the right term for the show?
I'm an Illusionist, but you've got your shows. I get it. It's tough. Everyone's like Illusionists, and I'm like, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I never really thought about that, how I would say that. Illusionist show, whatever.
Yeah,
very good. You have these moments where you're going out into the community. You're helping people raise money, like the Go Red for Women. You're also an actor. I know that you've done some theater work.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, talking about time and radio. You really have your hands and feet in so many different buckets at all times.
But I think it all encompasses itself, right? Like,
yeah,
I feel like we're all entertainers, right? That's what I am.
Yep.
I'm purely an entertainer. I made my career doing magic, right? And then 3 years ago, the Hudson Valley voted me best comedian in the Hudson Valley, and I thought that was hilarious.
That is awesome.
Because I was like, I'm not really a comedian. Don't tell anybody. But then, like, I started to, like, realize that, especially people at Headless, since we have such a high turnover and, you know, so many people come and see that show and then whatever, when I get off the stage and I, like, go down and I talk to people and people come over and say hi, they're always like, you know, you're more of a comedian than you are a magician. You made us laugh like crazy. And I was like, yeah, but I did magic.
Yeah.
Which makes me, I just make you laugh. I use comedy to move, you know, the magic along and, like, kind of, like, the segues and things like that. So... I'm an entertainer at heart. So whether that's, you know, hosting events, emceeing stuff, doing shows, acting, all of that, it all falls into the same thing in my book.
Yeah, I feel that. It's funny because when I was still in school and people were asking me all the time, it's like, what do you want to do with your life? And it's like, first of all, weighted question that you're trying to ask a kid. But then second of all, I said, it's like, as long as I'm in entertainment, like, I feel like I'll be very happy.
You didn't want to be an astronaut?
No, not an astronaut or
a firefighter
anything.
Or a man person? No,
none of that stuff. No.
What were the quintessential? Do you remember? Like,
doctor,
like
lawyer, all that.
No, but do you have like a piece of paper of like what you wanted to be?
Oh, no. I was from a very early age, initially musician.
Okay, there you go.
And still am a musician and I still perform and I still record. I just dropped a new single. Check it out, For a Moment, now on all streaming platforms.
All streaming. Go listen.
But besides that, as I learned and grew with my career and I found so many different outlets for creativity, it was like, oh, I don't have to be limited to just one form of entertainment. And I've been able to branch off and here I am doing podcasting. I've also hosted a number of charity events myself. I just did something with the CPCA like a month ago.
Yeah,
you know,
love them too.
Things like that. So I've just found, oh, and then I did like... I was on the radio, then I did, working at live concert venues, and all of that was extremely rewarding to me. So it was like, yeah, as long as I'm in entertainment somehow, some way, I'll feel pretty fulfilled.
Yeah, in front of the camera or behind the camera. I mean, I love production and things like that. I do a whole bunch of stuff for Broadway, and I love that side of things.
I didn't know that you did stuff for Broadway. Yeah. I knew that you've been involved with theater around here, but Broadway, talk about that.
So I've consulted magic-wise on a couple shows and had a lot of fun doing that. That's really cool and interesting to do. And then the other side of the coin is that I do production. So getting the show off the ground and ready and helping with all of that. It's such a large team and I have such a tiny, tiny part, but... yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, I'm not selling out venues Monday through Wednesday unless it's a corporate gig or resort or I'm somewhere, you know. So, like, it keeps me fresh for my own show. I learn new things that are going on and the right way to do things versus the wrong way, which is great. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
That's amazing. So, let's, like, bring it back. We were somehow we talked about my childhood there for a second, but let's talk about yours. What inspired you to get into magic in the first place?
I mean, who hasn't seen a magic show and like, or got a magic kit? I mean, my story is very cliche, like most magicians. I was 9 years old when I got my first magic kit for Christmas from my aunt. It was a Lance Burton magic kit. And I actually, during the pandemic, I went through and was trying to find the first ever magic kit I had online, because I had parts and pieces of it still at my parents' house, in my childhood bedroom. But I like wanted an unopened kit for my magic room at my house. So I was like, I gotta find one, could never find one. And then I went back, I guess I looked at it prior to the pandemic. And then during the pandemic, I went back on and I was looking again, because a buddy of mine, Joe Q, was like, he's a collector.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know Joe Q?
Yep.
Who doesn't know Joe Q? But anyway, he was like, we were talking about our first magic kits and things like that. And I was like, oh, I really got it. So I went online and I found one. And it had a hole in it. But I was like, all right, I'll get it, whatever. And then, you know, eBay doing an eBay's thing popped up and said, hey, we found another one.
Did you?
And so I found another one and I bought it. And actually, a couple months ago, I got to bring it to Lance and he signed it for me.
Really?
Yeah, so it's not my first, like the actual one, but it's, you know, now it's the full kit. We had to open it so he could sign it, but yeah. So that was
honestly
really cool.
That's pretty cool though.
So yeah, my Aunt Nancy got me that for Christmas, and I fell in love with magic. Started doing magic shows for, you know, my family and things like that. And then I went and saw David Haynes, who's a local magician.
I've heard
from
of
Poughkeepsie,
him.
And he went out and did cruise ships and toured the country and did a lot of stuff. And I went and saw him at the Dutchess County Fair, and I looked at my dad and I was like, Dad, I want to do that. And he was like, okay. And like, I had already been doing smaller shows, but like, you know, David was doing the big illusions. Him and Kathy were up there and, you know, they were doing all the big box tricks. And my dad was a builder. So I was like, oh, maybe, you know, and he's like, all right, let's figure it out. So then we went home and we looked at plans and tried to build our own stuff, which was a lot of fun and good bonding time. And at 15, I got hired by the East Fishkill Rec to do the camp show there.
Oh, that's fun.
And that was my first paycheck from 15 on. And I traveled the country performing magic ever since. It's awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's neat. I love what you were saying there with your dad, how the fact that he had this building background and you're kind of able to intertwine that all together.
It's very funny because magic, when you build magic, it has to be deceptive and like tiny. And like, you know, it's not really about structure. It's more about convincing people what they're seeing isn't what they're, you know, like you got to hide certain things, right? We all know magic is an art form. I didn't go to Hogwarts, right? And my story isn't there.
No!
I know. Sorry.
I'm not hearing this. No.
Sorry to burst everybody's bubble, but it's an art form. So, you know, his building structural and then trying to build magic tricks was always a lot of fun because it was just like, they'd be super heavy and like really well built, but they'd be like massive chunks of magic. But that's how you get started, because the concept is the reason why people don't know the good magic is because it's expensive. So if you have a builder build it and you get the rights to perform it, it's thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking $10,000, $20,000, $40,000, $60,000, $80,000 for one trick that takes 30 seconds.
Mm.
So to be an illusionist as a teenager, it's really tough.
Yeah.
So like, we built a lot of props and we bought used stuff and got hand-me-down stuff and things like that and tried to fix things up, but that's the only way to do it. So for a kid, that's what you got to do. So I had to go through a phase of like, the built by dad stuff and me. I remember there was a story. I was doing a talent show and I built a box. My dad wasn't home. He was working. And I like was trying to build a box that I could escape from for a talent show.
Mm-hmm.
And I came, I was done. I was super excited. He was going to come home and we were going to put it in his truck and he'd bring it. And it rocked. It was so out of, it wasn't square.
Uh-oh.
It was like, yeah. And he wouldn't let me leave the house until he fixed it.
Oh, wow.
Not that he was like, no son of mine, but like, you know, basically like no son of mine is going to leave, you know? You know, so yeah. So my dad built a lot of the houses here in Dutchess County, framed a lot of the houses, built it. I mean, he's the jack of all trades and I've learned so much from him. But yeah, so I started building stuff. And so now that's kind of my background today, is that I can build certain things, but now we're up to the level where I license them or buy them from actual builders and more people that are selling their effects. But it's expensive, and that's why we keep the secret alive.
That's really awesome though. But yeah, let's continue on about like the level of entry there to be able to get into everything. You know, as a musician, you know, all the instruments I needed to buy, all of the sound equipment I needed to buy, everything that I built up, everything that you see in this room right now, not you guys, but you can. This is all my stuff. This isn't
awesome.
Stuff that MAJ got me. Did all this and made the room, but this is all my equipment and I have so much more in storage. It took many years to acquire it. So that being said, the fact that you started in your teens and then you built up from there, you know, did anybody ever say to you, is like, you're crazy for doing this?
Yeah, I mean, not in a bad way. I was picked on and teased for doing magic throughout school and wanting to be a magician, right? Because it's different. And, you know, I had a core group of teachers that were true believers and really supported everything. I think they saw something. And then I had the ones that were like, you got to get a real job. And mm-hmm. And I get it. Then more than now, it's like we've got to keep them on a straight, narrow path of a career and whatever. The arts is not a career. I get it, right? Not everybody makes it. Not everybody can do it. And so I understand where they were coming from. But yeah, I got told all the time that, but what do you really want to do? And I'd be like, I originally wanted to be an actor.
And you are acting through this
that's
100%. As well, too.
There's a quote that, it's controversial in a way because some magicians are like, well, I don't really believe in that, but I do. It's a quote by Robert Houdin that says, a magician is just an actor playing the part of a magician.
I can see that. Yeah.
So, right, like we're instructing you certain ways and we're acting. I mean, remember, I know how it's done.
Mm-hmm.
So when I looked as shocked as you, there's acting there, right? Like
100%.
Right? Like, there's certain things that I still don't know that I love with magic. And it's that wonder that I think is so important to hang on to. And that's really why I love magic, is because I give people back that wonder that you've lost, right? As a child, you have the most sense of wonder. As you get older, you lose it, right? Like a kid was like, where's the water come? How does the water come out of the fountain? Doesn't make any sense to them. We know there's a pump in the basement, pumping it up into our houses, right?
Mm-hmm.
But people don't know that. And then as you get older, we live in a society where we want to know the answers to like everything. And that's the only reason why magicians keep their secrets, is because we want to give you that wonder. That feeling you get is why we do magic. It's not because we're arrogant. That's not why we're not sharing the secrets or keeping the secrets because we think we're better. It's because we want you to have that feeling and to be able to, enjoy that.
Wow. That really is beautiful.
Sorry, that was deep. I don't know if I want to. No, I tend to go on tangents, so sorry if I do that. So.
It wasn't a tangent, but that was deep. I love that. That's so good.
I mean, if you think about it, that's what it is. So yes, totally wanted to be an actor. Did magic, was doing magic, was doing school. I was in proscenium at John Jay High School in East Fishkill. I was in my Mrs. McElroy, or now Mrs. Banda, gave me my first part in a play. I played Oliver Warbucks in Annie.
Hey!
In fifth
nice.
Grade, But I think further back, like Mrs. Gardner, I can't believe I can remember some of these names. Mrs. Gardner in third grade, we made paper plates and like animals, and then we acted out something. And I can vividly remember that moment. And like from there, I was like, I want to be an actor.
Mm.
And like I kept wanting to be an actor. And then eventually I found magic, and I was like, it's very similar. It's different. And I kept doing that while continuing to act. But when I went to college, I went to school for theater. I have a communications degree with a minor in theater.
Nice.
And so like I love obviously all of this, the cameras, the things like this. And yep. I love doing that kind of stuff. And I went to school for that. But I was like, oh, I'm going to L.A. I used to tell my mom all the time, I'm going to Hollywood, I'm going to be an actor. She goes, no, you're not. No, you're not. And I was like, oh, okay. And like the city was always a dangerous place. Couldn't go to the city either, right? She wanted, just pick a college somewhere. And I remember finding out that I can go to New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of acting in New York City.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, if I can't go to LA, I was like, well, since you won't let me go to the city, I'm going to go to LA. And she was like, no, you're not going to LA. And I was like, well, I'm going to the city then. And she goes, okay, you can go to the city.
Wow. Okay.
So my
compromises.
My mom was a big push in the backup plan, which I think is good and smart, right, in the world of entertainment. They both have supported me tremendously. But I went to school for her. And I don't know where I'm going with this, but what were we talking about? Oh, acting. Oh, so then this is what I wanted to say. Sorry, this is the tangents and the million
You're
things
fine.
Going on in my brain.
It's fascinating.
When I got to college, I was doing magic with some buddies here in the Hudson Valley throughout high school, and we were having a lot of fun and doing it. And they went to college, I went to college, and like they did their thing, I did my thing. And I like kept doing magic here and there, but I was like, oh, I'm in the city, I'm going to do, is that me?
No, that's somewhere else.
There's a phone. I don't think
there's
you guys can
phone,
hear it, but
it's
like, I was like, is it me? We keep looking around, but okay.
It's like, where is that? I think it's outside of the office, but it's not any of ours.
Okay, good. Because I was like, did I pocket dial somebody? I've been doing that lately, so I get really paranoid about that. But anyway. I
should just make sure.
Right?
Nope, like, we're good.
Let me check.
right on the.
We're good. Okay. I didn't feel it going off, but I was like, this is so strange. Sorry. Anyway, back to the story that has no ending. So I was doing acting and things like that. And on my resume, I had like fire breathing and magic and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a call from a casting director. I had been doing like little bits and pieces on like, some extra work and some small roles on some TV shows and movies. And I wasn't getting any further. But every time I kept getting a call to do magic.
Mm.
And so I got a call from MTV, and they were doing a week with no music on TRL, Total Request Live.
Yeah.
And they were like, we'd love you to come in and do some magic. So I went in and made my television debut on MTV doing magic. And it was a lot of fun and it was awesome. And then from there, I went out and I did a bunch of stuff, but I just kept getting called back for magic. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to shelve acting. for a little bit until I create this magic career fully. And then I'm going to, so that's what I did. So like, it was so funny that I wanted to be an actor, but I'm acting in magic. And then I was like, I'm just going to stop magic. I'm going to do acting. And then it just pulled me right back in.
Yeah. Right when I thought I was out, pulled me back in.
And I'm so happy. I'm so happy about it. And, you know, I love entertaining. I like making people laugh and giving people wonder.
That's it. Well, it's awesome to see it, not just watching your show, but to see the way that other people interact watching your show. I people watch.
Oh, I love
when
that.
When I see you perform, I people watch because I'm curious, how's everybody else reacting to this? Like, what's going on? And it's really cool to see the confusion, the wonder from kids from 1 to 90, whatever, you know, it's awesome to get to see that. You do a wonderful job bringing that wonder.
I appreciate
it. So that's fantastic.
No, thank you.
There, I wanted to bring up that whole, if anybody thought you were crazy to be doing this, because I heard a lot of that myself when it came to music.
Of course.
I had very good grades in school, so all my teachers were like, oh, doctor, lawyer, whatever, engineer. And it's like, no, entertainment. And they're like, oh, that's such a waste. And it's like, why? Why is that such a waste? And it's like, I feel like I can use my brains, my smarts, my creativity in this way. And hey, I've built, like, so far I've built something really cool for myself.
Yeah.
One last anecdote before I get back to you. And I'm curious if you have something similar. When I was in high school, I had an email, rockin' since 97. And one of my teachers says to me, it's like, Connor, you're about to go into college. You're going to get into the workforce. You're going to need a more professional email. And I said, I'm going into music and entertainment. What is more professional than that?
Yeah, right. That's so great.
I still have that email to this day. It is not my main email, but I still have it. And I chuckle every time I look at it.
Yeah, mine, I mean, we didn't really, email wasn't huge for me going through high school, right? I'm a little bit older, but when I went to college, I created like NY Act or something, and I still have it. And
oh,
it's
nice.
Like, you know, it's bombarded with spam and junk and whatever, but I still have it. And I like, that's how I used to submit for roles and things like that. Cause I was like, oh, well, I'm an actor and I'm in New York. So this clearly states what my intentions are. But yeah, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
It's funny just the way that we look back at things and the domino effect and like what was really there showing us where we would be eventually.
Well, I laugh so much because it wasn't, you know, I hope we touch upon the radio thing because the radio
was
so fascinating for me because it was never on my radar at all and never a thing that, you know, I went and promoted my shows on radio. I never expected to co-host a morning radio show. But when I would take calls, they would be like, I'd be like, okay, I just need your email. I'd be typing it in and they'd be like, you know, blah, blah, blah at AOL. And then I'd be like, okay, at AOL. And they'd be like, I know I'm a dinosaur. And I'm like, you would be surprised how many people still have their AOL.
Are you kidding me? Absolutely.
About, or, you know, mine was Yahoo.
Yeah.
You know, but like all these like, you know, Hotmail, all these funny things. And I laugh so much because everyone's like, yeah, I know I'm ancient. And I'm like, no, every single
Not
person hangs
really.
On to it.
Yeah, it's like
well, because everyone's got Gmail now, right?
And Gmail, like, you know. Yeah. And I have my Gmail accounts, but I still got some of the old ones too. They're the spam accounts
of
now.
Course,
but
of course.
But you're right. I would get that too when people would call in, they'd win something. What's your email? It's like, I'm aging myself, but AOL or Yahoo. And like, and I think to myself, it's like, not really,
no,
like whatever.
No,
like,
and I always found that fascinating when people would make sidebar conversation like comments like, you know, basically making fun of themselves, which is adorable. But I'm like, no, the person who won yesterday, same thing.
Yeah,
as well.
We get a lot of these, actually.
Yeah,
so, like, no, it's a thing. People are still using it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's talk about radio because, again, that's where we met. I think I originally met you. Well, I had seen you and I'd heard you. But I think, like, the first time we ever got to meet was at, like, one of the parades.
Okay, yeah.
I think. I could be wrong, but
I'm
think.
I'm sure. I mean, yeah.
It's gotten to that point, like, we've been around each other enough where we kind of forgotten 100%, like, how we originally met.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, we had this period where we were overlapping in the radio sphere, and with me, radio was never 100% the way I wanted to go. The opportunity presented itself, and it was like, oh, that's awesome. I would love to. Yeah, sure. It was kind of like a bucket list thing. It was never like the top on my list, but it was like, yeah, if I could host a radio show, sure, that's awesome. And I did, and it was a very fun time. For you, it sounded like, was it even on a bucket list? Was it on any list?
No, it was never on a list. It's wild how it happened. I would, you know, I was going on to radio shows, promoting my shows that I'd be doing wherever they are.
You know,
whenever I would travel, radio has such a big reach. And I always knew that radio had a good reach. So I also do magic. So like, it's like a fun, interesting topic that not everybody does. So when I traveled, no matter where I was, what state I was in, they would usually want me to come on and like were willing to promote my show in return for magic and like, you know, content and things like that and a good story. And I can do some things that are like radio based magic tricks. So like everybody can do them along on the radio, which is a lot of fun. And so I had been doing that and, you know, had no idea, but I was at the top of my career in 2018, 2019, top of my career.
Same.
I was doing phenomenal and I was getting ready to go out on a big tour and we were teching our tour and doing all this stuff. And I was super ready. And I had heard through the grapevine that Joe Daly and Michelle Taylor were getting ready to retire, right? Radio legends here in the Hudson Valley. And
love them so much.
Yes, they're phenomenal humans. I would go on their show all the time. Joe has given me such great advice that I still, you know, every time I question something, I'm like, oh, what would Joe do? You know?
Same here.
And I love Joe. And so when I heard that, I was like, oh, that's a bummer and like whatever. And I had gotten a call and they were like, hey, we don't know if this is something you'd be interested in. And we know your schedule's crazy, but with technology, you know, you can do the show from anywhere now. We don't have a lot of money, but we're looking for somebody to host with Annie, which it turned out to be. Well, they wouldn't tell me in the beginning. And I said, sure, I'd be interested. I said, I don't know if it's something I would be good at.
Yeah.
You know, I go in and I do interviews, but doing a daily show, I don't know what that would be like. So heard nothing. I went to Joe and Michelle's end of the year or retirement, whatever. It was like their Christmas show. It was Christmas Eve or whatever.
It was something like that. I remember being in the Adams parking lot picking up stuff for the holidays.
Still hadn't heard anything back from the big bosses about like whether they were going to go for this or not. I had some interviews, but I had to keep it all under wraps.
Mm.
So I was like, I have no idea what's going on with this. And I just wanted to make sure, you know, I had talked to Joe and Michelle and they said, we heard that, you know, they were talking to you and I wanted their blessing and they gave me their blessing. And it was crazy because I didn't hear anything. And then January 14th or whatever, I got a call and they were like, well, I guess it was a couple days before. And they were like, hey, can you come in for a meeting on Monday? And I was like, no. And they were like, how about Tuesday? And I said, sure, I can do Tuesday. I had a show booked already for the Monday. So, or I was traveling back. I couldn't remember, but I came in on Tuesday and first day was Monday. Mm-hmm. And I came in and I sat there and it wasn't a meeting. It was, let's see how they connect and how
they
mesh.
Just throw you right in,
to the sharks, which was a lot of fun. And it was crazy because, if you know anything about radio, there's a lot of layoffs yearly in radio, right? Radio comes and goes and does really well. So don't mean to bring it up.
No, it's all good. It led me to this.
But the first day I was there, we had, a guy there that was like overseeing us in case we had any questions or any problems with the board and the system and how it all worked. And I knew nothing, but he sat here. Annie was behind the board doing the things. And I sat in the co-host spot and I, you know, behind the phone, had my computer, was just there talking and chatting. And like the big boss came in and took the guy out and he went out into the hallway. And then I saw him in the parking lot with papers in his hand and he never came back. They let him go my first day. And I was just like, okay. And I, you know, it was a crazy wild thing, but it happens all the time.
Oh my God.
So like, but I was just like, and like Annie being a radio vet, like she like knew, she was like, oh no. And like, she kind of had an idea. And then she was like, really like it was a crazy experience. Fast forward to everything worked out for us and it was a lot of fun and it was great. And fast forward to, I was still doing magic, but fast forward to March when the world shut down.
Yeah.
I had to stop doing magic. Now I told my parents over and over again, what's the only thing that's ever survived? The depression, all of that stuff. Bars and entertainment.
Exactly.
So I was like, we're going to be fine. Yep. No matter what happens in the world, mom and dad, I'll be able to entertain and I'll always have a job.
Yep.
Well, they no large gatherings. And what do? I bring a lot of people together in one space. So they were like, no gatherings, whatever. But I still had the radio.
Yeah.
And when everything shut down, they gave us the option. They were like, well, somebody needs to be in the studio, but you can work from home if you don't want to. And Annie was my coach and really taught me a lot about radio. And she was like, we got to be here for these people. You know, there are, you know, essential workers that are going to work every day that are going to turn on the radio and we need to be there for them. And she's like, I'm going to be here. And I was like, well, if you're going to be here, I'm going to be here. And then I got to perform, if you will, every day, still not being able to do magic, but we turned it into a giant circus. And it was a lot of fun. We did Workout Wednesdays with Fitness Michelle, who owns the Wheelhouse in Poughkeepsie. And she would join us via Zoom. And I learned all about Zoom and kind of video production from the internet world. And like, I would dress up in a costume and like work out and like just do the silliest things. And like, radio is great when you can go out and live a life. And then you come in and you have something to talk about.
Yes.
But when the world is shut down and you go from the radio to your house and back, you have to figure out stuff to talk about.
It's tough.
Annie looked at me and she was like, you know, you have to open up. Mm. She's like, you're not doing your shows. And what people knew from me from growing up here in the Hudson Valley or wherever I travel is like, you know what I post on social and you watch my show and you might come say hi after the show and do a meet and greet or whatever it might be. And then that's it. And I get to choose kind of what you see and what you get.
Yeah.
And like, she was like, you got to open up. Like, you can't, like, we got to, it's radio, it's real, it's whatever. And so I started doing that. And I'll tell you, I've had some weird interactions, and I'm sure you can relate to this. And I shouldn't say weird. It's not weird. Weird is the wrong word, but like some like eye-opening things where like we would be at an appearance a week later and someone would come up to me and be like, are you feeling any better?
Yes.
And I'm like, what? What do you mean? And I was like, first off, I don't know you.
Yeah.
Like, and like, what? It's like a weird kind of thing. And I'm like, oh, so like I was sick last week. And he was like, Ryan can't be in because he's not feeling well, whatever, blah, blah, blah. You know, whatever it was. And like this person listens every day to the radio. And like I'm there with them. And when I'm gone, it strikes them and they mark that down and I'm not feeling well. Well, they listen to me every day. And in the radio, it's weird. It's kind of like this podcast, right? Like there could be one person, a million people, or no one listening.
Yeah.
We have no idea.
Yeah.
So when we, you know, if you do a contest on the radio and they call, you're like, oh, good, there's people out there.
Oh, somebody's listening.
Somebody's listening.
It's like, not just to avoid.
You never know.
Yeah.
So like for me, it's like a weird, it's totally a psychological trip, if you will, because you're in a room. You know, most radio people are by themselves. I was fortunate enough to have Annie and we had a lot of guests in and things like that. But like most people are by themselves and you don't know unless someone reaches out now. I mean, obviously contact now with radio stations is so great, right? You can text, you can communicate. There's like a million ways to do it. But I was just like, whoa, that was a weird experience for me only because I was like, it was new.
Yeah.
Right. And like in the world of entertainment, like, you know, your actors, your superstars, your rock stars, your whatever, you only know what they put out.
Yes.
Yep. But in radio, if you're on the radio 5 days a week and you're just talking and spewing, I will tell you, I could do a 5-hour magic show in a heartbeat and feel great. When I did a 5-hour morning show, I was exhausted.
Yeah, it's a lot because you're trying to, well, you're not sure who's on the other side of, like, I always considered it like, you know, police interrogation, how you have the two-sided mirror. Like, they can see you, but you can't see them. Right. And it's like, is anybody on the other side? Hello? And you're like, I'll be sweating, thinking about stuff. Like, there's a lot of time and prep that goes into it. It was always nice when I interviewed somebody. But yeah, when it's just me, it was like, oh God, what am I talking about? And it is a weird thing. I have a similar story of like people coming up to me. It was fun. We were doing an event over at the MJN Convention Center. And I was just there for the event, helping promote everything. And a couple of people come up to me and they're like, Connor, oh my God, it's so good to see you. How's things going? I'm like, hey guys, how are you? Oh my God, so good to see you. And, you know, we get talking and they're like bringing up all this personal stuff of mine. And I'm like, and I'm thinking in my head, who are you people?
Yeah.
And
how do I know you?
How do I know you? It's killing me.
I love when people, you know, are fans and listen and, you know, they become friends and things like that. I have tons of people in radio and in entertainment world that come and support my show and now we're friends.
Yeah.
But like, it's that initial, like, and I don't like to be fake. Like, so I'm always same. Like, like just refresh me. Like, right. Like,
right.
Is it radio? Is it doing shows? Right. Like there's one of me and a ton of people.
Yeah.
And like, and not in a cocky way or anything like that, like saying, oh, like I can't remember, but I turn over a ton of people. I mean, at Headless, we do. So I am always like, I'll bring somebody up. Their name will be Frank. I'll call him Fred because the guy in the last show was Fred.
Yep.
It's like, you know, so, and my brain is so lost as it is already as a magician and entertainer. Like, I feel like I'm already out there and I don't know where I'm going and things like that half the time. But like, I'm just like, so it was like an interesting thing that I don't think many people know. I listened to an interview by Bobby Bones.
Mm.
He's on a
love his work.
Yeah. He's a syndicated country morning show host. And he said, you are their best friends. They listen to you every day. They get in the car. And like, right. Like I had to think back to like high school and driving. And I'm like, oh my God, this is 100% right. Every single person can relate to this. You know, you turn on the radio and if you listen to the radio every single day, you take your drive to school, to work, whatever it is. And you listen to whoever's on the radio. And I like on my way here, I was like, oh my gosh, like this is what it's like to do this. Cause I love listening to the radio. And so it's relatable that you can experience this and like you know everything about the person on the other end but they know nothing about you,
and it's so weird.
It's so funny because it's like I get this now, and it took me a little while to get used to that and understand that, and then I opened up and now I have no secrets and I don't care about, you know, I don't hide anything, any, you know, like it wasn't that I was hiding and it wasn't a privacy thing, it was just but we ran out of things to talk about when we first started radio. We wanted to, like, we hated spot blocks, which are commercial breaks, right?
Yes,
is what they're called spot blocks. So they were like really long when we first started and we were like, man, I wish we didn't have to play these, but that's how we get paid. So like we have to play them. Right. And so we were like, man, we need more time. We were like, it was such a good conversation, but it's gotta be short and sweet and get to the point. And then pandemic happened and we lost all the advertising. And then we were like, We had a 4-minute spot block when you used to be able to only do a max of like a 3 to 4 minute break.
Yep.
And now we had 10 minutes to talk and nothing to talk about. It was such a weird, and it was a great time. And, you know, I love radio, and I'm sure one day I'll get back into it. I think radio is so, so powerful and so great. But as we started to get out, remember, I took the job at the top of my career, and there was no money. And I mean, there was no money. And I'm not, I don't hide that from anyone. There was no money for me, and I get it. And I was okay with it at the time because I was going to do it on my terms when I could. That's how I was hired. When I could do it, I was going to do it. And then, listen, iHeart got lucky and I got lucky. We both, I mean, radio saved my life because if I didn't have radio, I don't know what I would do. Mm. I don't think I would have ever gone to Zoom shows, magic shows. I wasn't into any of that.
That would have been tough.
It wasn't tough. My thing. I like the interaction with people. And you've seen my show, and my show is based on the people that are there. That is how my show works. I don't stand up there and the show's about me. I bring people up and interact with the audience, and that's what I love. And so I'm very, very grateful. But as we got out of the pandemic, all of my story, I have big box illusions. I have, you know, I hang upside down from a big contraption and escape a straitjacket. I have a water torture cell. I cut people in half. I've got crazy big props and a ton of sound equipment, a ton of lighting equipment. And I store a lot of it at my house and in trailers, but I also need storage units.
And that costs.
And that costs money. And during the pandemic, that didn't stop. None of my bills, none of the licensing rights that I have, all of that stuff that I need to pay for didn't stop, even though I wasn't performing. And where would I have put it? So I had to pay for all of that still. And so on the way out of the pandemic, when things started to open back up, I had to go full swing back into making, my living is doing entertainment.
Yeah.
And radio was a fun thing that I did. And listen, I got a paycheck. It was very little, but it was fun. And at the time it was fun money and it was just like, whatever, this is great.
And it held you over to a degree, right?
Yeah. You know, whatever. It paid the bar tab, if you will, a night out, not anymore.
Yeah.
But you know, like that was fun money and it was enjoyable. And listen, I wasn't sleeping and I was loving it, but you know, when we came out of it, I had to get back on the road and I had to start doing things. And they weren't a big fan of me not being on the radio as much. Mm. Consistency is key, going back to that whole, if somebody's missing from your morning routine, you feel it and you don't start the same way. Just like we have to be on in radio every single day. Like if we're having a bad day, it's really tough for us to be like, would you want to listen to the morning? Yeah, good morning, everybody. This is, you wouldn't listen to a morning show like that. No. You need bubbly and you need people.
The energy.
Yeah, you need the energy. So like we always had to be on. So when I got home after, after doing the show, it was, sometimes noon, 1 o'clock, by the time I got out of the radio station, I'd get home and I would be exhausted and want to go to sleep. And I'm like, the day isn't even done. Yeah. It was a drain, but it was a lot of fun. And I miss it. And I'm sure I'll get back into it at some point, but I had to get back out on the road. And they weren't a big fan of that. And then I was like, listen, if you want me, we gotta renegotiate. And they couldn't, at the time there was no money.
Yeah. So, understandable.
And unfortunately that's how you got let go as well. There's just no money. And I get it. I run a business. If you have no money, there's nothing you can do but let people go. And it's an unfortunate cycle and it's very incestuous, right? Radio. Everybody, no matter what station you're with or whatever, you know each other and you'll probably work with each other. And that's why you always have to be great to people because you could get fired from one and get hired by another and then get hired back by the other.
Do not burn bridges.
Yes, in radio.
You cannot. And most of the time, they say rivalries between stations, but there's...
I laughed so bad at that. And I get
it. Yeah. I guess there's an outward feeling with that, but inward, we're all chill. There's no issues or infighting between anybody. It's we can help each other out. We can.
I could tell that there were some when I got the job on the other radio stations that I used to do that were you're now blacklisted in a way to promote my shows because I was still doing shows, right? As soon as the government said we could have 50 people, I did a show for 50 people and it had to be educational. And I was like, great, it's going to be called The Art of Magic and I'm going to teach you and educate you of the history of magic while doing magic.
There you go.
And I had to get back at it.
Yeah.
I mean, that long without doing work, and having all these bills and doing all of that, you had to do something. So I just got creative and that's how we got the workaround,
It's funny that you say you got blacklisted from other radio stations when you started working for another. At Town Square, we weren't allowed to self-promote, so I utilized my connections with the other radio stations to be able to promote myself.
That's crazy.
In other ways.
No, but for me, it was and I get it. I was the competition in a way, if that's how you want to look at it, right? Everybody's going for ratings and this book, which to me, I'm like, who's doing this book? This book doesn't really... It makes no sense. It's the same way TV is rated and all of everything is done by this book, and you're like... Who's doing this anymore?
Right.
It's like when you get a phone, who's answering telemarketers anymore?
Right.
Why do people try these things? I always think it's funny. But it's such a cool world that I never knew. And I'm so blessed and so grateful to have had a small, little run in it. And I'd love to get back into it. But yeah, it's, you know, I've got to be financially stable in my own career. You know, like, I don't understand how any of these guys or gals do it, because it's a lot of work for not a lot of money.
No, when I was at the radio station, I had at minimum two other like side gigs.
You have to.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not this lucrative thing that some people might think.
No, if you get, obviously, if you're a Bobby Bones, a Delilah, right? An Elvis Durant, you know, you get all of those, like, of course, 100% you're going to be fine.
They're fine.
Syndicated, and then all of the other pieces fall into place with,
but
you
your local people? Yeah. Nah, your local people are just,
they're just
doing their best.
And pause. We're going to take a quick break from our interviews to hear from our sponsors. First up, we got our friend Andrew O'Grady from MHA of Dutchess County.
Hang hope this holiday. Support Mental Health America. MHA's annual wreath sale is back. Support Mental Health America of Dutchess County this holiday season by purchasing a beautiful, fresh wreath for only $30. Orders accepted while supplies last. Order online at mhadutchess.org/wreath or call 845-473-2500 extension 1391 to order or schedule delivery. Happy holidays from MHA of Dutchess County.
Next, we have a message from our friend Jeff Feldman from Feldman, Kleiman, Collins & Sape LLP, attorneys at law.
Hi, I'm Jeff Feldman. In 1986, when Paul Kleiman and I started our practice, our goal was to create a law firm where you could meet with an attorney and feel confident that that attorney would be with you every step of the way. Today, the firm has been successfully trying cases at all levels of state and federal courts throughout the Hudson Valley and Capital District. We have been selected as one of the best personal injury and medical malpractice defense law firms by U.S. News and World Report every year since 2009. For all of those years, we were the only firm chosen in any litigation specialty between Albany and White Plains. Your case is important to us. Giving you the time and personal attention you deserve has always been the hallmark of success. Initial consultations are free of charge and always with an attorney.
A message from Dutchess Beer Distributors. From now to the end of November, Dutchess Beer Distributors presents Football Face-Off. Come on out to your favorite Hudson Valley bars and restaurants where you can win free Bud Light and neutral seltzers, along with other awesome prizes. Try your hand at one of their three games: football toss, beer can cornhole, or flick a field goal. You can check out the events calendar to see where Dutchess Beer Distributors will be next in the description of this episode.
Walsh Wednesday wants to give a big thank you to Prime Storage. It's the end of the year, and you may need to free up space for guests for the holidays, store seasonal decorations, secure valuables, and maybe even hide the presents. A temporary storage unit can help declutter a home, protect fragile items during a busy period, and provide a convenient way to organize and transition belongings before, during, and after the festive season. Whatever the reason, Prime Storage makes storage simple through seamless service, flexible rental options, and facilities conveniently located throughout the United States and Canada. By using our link in the description of this episode, you will get one free month of storage, plus you'll save 15% on rental rates. Make the holiday season simpler and store with Prime Storage.
Up next, we have our friend Philomena Finelli from Impact PR and Communications.
Thanks, Connor. I'm Philomena Finelli, CEO of Impact PR and Communications and a media maven, which is a fancy way of saying that my team and I help companies get in the news, transform leaders into thought leaders, and cut through the clutter with messaging that matters. And we do it all with a smile. Our agency was named the Woman-Owned Small Business of the Year for 2024 by the Metro New York District Office of the U.S. Small Business Administration, and we received the Gold Stevie Award for Women-Run Workplace of the Year, which is an international recognition. But it's not about the awards, it's about the personal interactions. We at Impact PR and Communications pride ourselves on crafting meaningful, results-driven public relations campaigns that are tailored to meet and exceed our clients' goals. If you want to learn more and talk to my team and I, visit PRwithimpact.com and let us know that you found out about us from Walsh Wednesday.
Thanks for listening, guys. It's time to get back to the show. And play. This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, MHA of Dutchess County, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Dutchess Beer Distributors, Feldman, Kleiman, Collins & Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, Vivash Med Spa and the Hudson Valley Ketamine Lounge, Prime Storage, and Walsh Valuation.
it's a cool world and it's close knit. And I've got to meet some amazing people and some people that still come. And, you know, it's nice when people are like, miss you on the radio. And
yeah.
I'm like, oh, I feel like I let people down. It's like a wild psychological ride if you ever be in radio.
I was at an award show last night supporting a colleague of mine. And somebody came up to me saying, it's like, yeah, I love the fact you're on the radio. And I'm like, I haven't been on the radio for like a year.
Yep. And yeah, it happens to me today. And it's, I think I left in 2003.
Yeah.
So it's almost 3 years.
2023.
What did I say?
2003.
I didn't mean that. I meant 23. See, this is that brain thing we talked about earlier. 2023.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so it'll be almost 3 years. In 2026, it'll be 3 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just like, people are always like, yeah, how's the radio? And I'm like,
not there.
I haven't been on the radio in a long time. Yeah. And I think it's funny that people are like, people don't listen to the radio. And I'm like, people listen to the radio.
Big
right?
time.
They're like podcasts,
big time.
Right? But like, if you want to know current events, local stuff, you want to laugh, you want to whatever, you're going to listen to a morning show.
Yeah. I still do.
Yeah. 100%. I do too. I get in the car and I hit it.
100%. Especially this time of year with the Christmas music. I want to listen to all that.
I surf all the time and listen to different things. I mean, obviously every day I wake up and my vibe is different. I love music. So like I'll like determine things, but like also depends on where I'm traveling. If I know I'm going further distance, I got to listen to a bigger station, things like that. So
I hear you. I hear you on that. No, it really is cool. There's talking about Joe Daly again. I remember he told me, and he might've shared the story with you too, that, he fell in love with the radio, like listening with his grandparents. And he said, they would say to him, there's like this golden microphone effect, the magic of the microphone. And that story of what he was telling me instilled in me. And I think about it, even like when we're here just on this podcast, there's something like of the magic of the microphone.
There is.
There is.
I mean, everything that anyone does and finds a love for is magical and like enjoyable and should pursue it. And you're still doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Even though you got let go, you're still doing it, which is awesome
and
great. Joe Daly would always laugh and tell me that he would never retire because he has to work forever because he worked in radio.
Yeah.
Because there's no money.
Exactly.
You know, you're not making. So Joe is back on the radio.
He still does weekends.
He's on the wall, which has a bunch of Hudson Valley radio legends that
are
on it, which I think is a great whole marketing campaign that they've really gone into, which I love. And I think that's great. But Joe told me something. We would have long talks and he was just such, I mean, he is such a down to earth human that would give you the shirt off his back and the advice of anything. And I'm going to get this wrong. So Joe, don't yell at me, but I like remember it and think of it
paraphrasing
all the time. And it's something about, I don't know if it's in the Bible or with Jesus or whatever it might be, but you're only worth what the people see in your eyes. So like something about being in your hometown, people don't believe you and don't believe in you. And like when you travel, then you find your worth.
Yes.
Right. And I guess that relates to Jesus and like maybe how like he would like talk. Please don't come at me because I don't know the full story. But how, you know, he would preach and do whatever in his hometown. And people would be like, what's this guy doing?
Yeah.
And then he would go and travel and then created these followers and whatever. And that is the truth. You're only worth like you're worth such little in your hometown.
Yeah.
Right. People are like, oh yeah, you know, I've been doing magic in this area forever. So like for me, a lot of people are like, oh yeah, it's just that guy, he does magic all the time. Right. I donate my time and do a lot of events. People are like, oh yeah. And they kind of brush it off. But if I travel anywhere and do a show, it's like the total opposite. And like, yeah. And the respect level and it's different. And so it's just so funny. So I like Joe shared that with me because I probably told him like, hey, like these people aren't taking me seriously or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And he shared me that when I was super young and I still remember it to this day. And it makes sense. So if you're struggling with something like that out there, take the words of Joe Daly and or whoever said it before Joe.
Yep.
And like, just remember that, like if you're struggling here, maybe spread your wings and get out a little bit further than these people around you. And you'll find yourself.
I 100% believe in that. I've experienced it. I've lived it. I've seen it. I know exactly what you're talking about. For the Jesus reference, I went to Catholic school. St. Peter's. Don't fail me now.
I hope you know this. I hope you can actually. Can you shed light on what?
Because
I feel like
this.
I just shared like the what are they called? Proverb. What's the one? Teach a man to fish.
Yeah.
I always say that one wrong too. So I probably just said the Jesus one wrong. Sorry.
No. I don't know the exact wording of what you're trying to say. I get the message of what you're saying. What I think Joe was taking from Jesus of Nazareth. In Nazareth, he was mocked. So he travels to Jerusalem and he gets the big following
in
Jerusalem.
Where have you been my whole life? I need you, every time I try to share the story, I need you to pop out of a door and be like, what he's trying to say is.
Yep. No. So, and then there are passages in the Bible I haven't read in a hot second, but I remember it was like him returning to Nazareth and how weird or awkward it could be. And especially when word kind of got back to Nazareth, it's like, oh, this Jesus guy, look what he's doing over in Jerusalem and all these other places. And, you know, it's like, and now he's showing up here and it's like, Oh, some big shot now, huh? You know.
When I share this story, please don't think that I think the Hudson Valley has treated me like that. I want a blanket statement and say that I've launched my career here. I'm very grateful. I chose to live here. I've traveled a lot of places, and everyone's always like, "Where's your favorite place you've ever been to?" And I say the Hudson Valley, and it's because we get all the seasons. We have a great community. Entertainment thrives here. All of that. I'm just saying specific people that I've come across in my life have treated me that way, and I'm like, I do this for, like, I think people think I'm still the kid in high school doing the fundraiser shows or the camp shows or whatever. And like, since then I've done I'm not knocking on the Hudson Valley. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the Hudson Valley. So.
Amen. I love that. Ryan, this has been absolutely phenomenal. As we're getting towards the end of our discussion here today.
Are we really?
We've been going for a while.
Oh, wow. Sorry.
No, you're fine. I love it. I know that you have places to be after this.
I don't want to hold you up. I do. But yeah, I'm sorry. I could talk forever.
No, this is fantastic. I can talk and listen forever. This is amazing. I do want to share with you one thing, the 2020 and the tour thing. I had a tour too.
Yeah.
I had a music
isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Imagine if we went on those tours, what life would have been like.
It
would have been crazy.
It would have been great and awesome. And it's taken a long time for entertainment to come back, and the buying habits of consumers and things like that have changed drastically since COVID. So it's really hard to pinpoint certain things, but I think we're there.
I think we're back
to where things are, and I know that's crazy to talk about and like, oh, we're back, but in the way of not only from ticket buyers, like, budgets.
Yes.
We're so low at a point. And like, it's like, I would love to go back out on the road, but I can't go for what people are willing to pay. So gotta wait. So that's my goal is to get back out there.
Yeah.
And I want to get back out there and travel a bunch and go back to where I was pre-COVID.
I miss the traveling so much because like 2019, I was all over the place. I'm flying out to Florida. I'm flying to Chicago. I'm flying to LA. I'm doing all these things. And it's like, wow, this feels cool. It was so fun. Yeah. And even the driving I had to do, it was like, even that was fun. So I would love to get back into it. I feel like I've created such roots for myself with, like, say, the studio and whatnot, but there are opportunities. But as I said, as we're getting now to towards the end of this discussion, I'm not wrapping this up. I'm like, we got to be done in 2 minutes.
No, I don't know how it works.
Dude, I'm the boss here.
That's right.
I'm the one that edits this. I'm the one that publishes it. What I say goes. We're good. But I want to talk about the magic and get a little bit more into some of the specifics for your shows. You've been doing this for years, as you've been saying. Are there specific tricks, specific scenes, specific moments that have like really stuck with you? Whether you still do them, whether they're new, they're old, or whatever. What are like some of your favorite illusions?
Oh, good question. I will tell you that I am a commercial magician, right? There are a few signature things that I do in my show that are based off of the people that came before me. Mm-hmm. Magic evolves, but it doesn't evolve at a rapid rate. Like you would think that like things are like, all the techniques and magic and everything is based off of previous people. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm not out there, priding myself on the fact that I'm doing an 100% original act and all my own stuff. Again, I'm a commercialized magician. So I buy commercial magic and then make it my own.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it works. So like I buy something that I think is really, really cool. And then I either fit it to me or, I create the story around it and things like that. So if you've ever seen my show, I do something with a bowling ball. It's hard to talk about magic because I don't want to explain it or ruin it because I come see a show.
Yep.
But I do something with a bowling ball that has really become a signature thing of me that everyone's like, oh my God, I love that. I do something that is so funny to me. Most adults love. It's this peanut butter and jelly trick, which is a lot of fun. I like put it on the shelf for a little bit, then take it back. And like, everyone's like, where's the peanut butter and jelly? And I just laugh because I'm like, I didn't think that. Okay, great. And I do something with a banana that a lot of people like. But for me, the first trick that I ever did was the first illusion was Harry Houdini's metamorphosis. So it's a substitution trunk. So somebody gets chained up and put inside the trunk. The trunk is examined and made sure that's solid, gets locked up. Somebody gets on top of it, throws up a curtain, and they switch places. I was doing that when I was in high school with my two other buddies, Joe and Chris. We would do magic. And we were doing that, and that's probably my all-time favorite, just because of the nostalgia behind it, and it being my first illusion. I still have a version of that in my show, and an upgraded version in the show, which is really, really cool. When I do the big stuff, I miss the big stuff. I have a lot invested in the big illusions. Mm-hmm. I think one of the most dangerous things that I do is either the water torture cell, I get inside of a water torture cell. It's a tank. I mean, it's real. Magicians do a bunch of magic, and then there are human feats or stunts. Yeah. So a lot of times we do things that are real and have incredible danger. Yeah. And you know, you can only be as safe as you can be, but I mean, I'm getting inside of a tank chained up and locked up inside a water tank. So there's obviously great danger and risk, which I think the adrenaline goes, and I really like it.
As somebody who's seen you do that once, I felt for you. Yeah. I'm like, holy crap, I really hope he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, everyone's like, oh, a lot of training. I trained, but you know, the first time you do it, I mean, it changes everything. Go in front of the lights and the people and be nervous about showing something that you've done for the first time, then adding that danger is crazy.
Yeah.
I do a thing, it looks like a giant bear trap above me, and I'm below it, and I'm escaping a straitjacket, and there's a rope that's holding these claws open, if you will, their jaws, and there's a rope, and it's designed to burn through on an average of like 60 seconds.
Yeah. Right?
The rope is designed to burn through. And you hope that's what it does. Yeah. And I have to escape the straitjacket before that. And again, there is no safeties. It's crazy. So you're up there doing these things and you're like, gosh, you know?
Yeah.
So like, I'm a firm believer when it's your time, it's your time. So like, I don't like, so go out and do anything crazy you want, skydive, do whatever you want. Because I truly believe that like when your hourglass is up, whether you're sitting at home on the couch or you're hanging upside down from a straitjacket, it's your time. But, I love those. I love creating vignettes. Copperfield is probably my favorite magician out of all of them, obviously Houdini as well. But I love these storyline vignettes. And I got away from that since COVID and a little before COVID, where I was just presenting these illusions and things like that, because it takes a lot more work to create these stories. And I would create, we would carry extra scenery and things like that just for the effect. And I got away from that a little bit. And last year and the year before, we've really gotten back into creating these new little vignettes. So we've got this really cool like 1950s vignette where I come in and it's like raining outside. I got a jacket and a hat on, and I take my hat off and I'm carrying an umbrella. I don't know where to put the umbrella, so I make it disappear. And then like I do all these different things, and it's all to music. There's no, I don't talk at all during these things. And we're working on a really cool new one that's kind of like a stagehand janitor kind of character, which is really cool. So I love getting into those kinds of things. That's where I am now. But my favorite is probably the one-man show stuff, whether it's the adult or family show. The interaction with people is great. And then I'm just presenting certain, you know, I'm just presenting commercialized effects, and I put my own spin on things. So, you know, I always think it's funny because a lot of times, like, somebody came up to me at a show and was like, oh, I just saw blah, blah, blah do this. And I was like, oh, I've been doing this since I was in high school. So, like, we all do the same similar tricks, and you're going to see it. But it's funny. Maybe you can relate to this if you've ever seen a magic show. If you saw me do it first, you would associate that trick. Oh, Ryan does that trick.
Mm-hmm.
But if you saw David Blaine do that trick, you'd be like, oh, I saw David Blaine do that trick.
Yeah.
It's so funny that we're all in the same world and we're marketed the same effects. And then it just depends on when you see them. So I always like to try new things and be the first to do something. So, we're working on a couple new things. I'm doing something right now in our show at Frosty Fest with an Etch-A-Sketch, which I'm really loving and enjoying.
Cool.
Yeah, bringing back the nostalgia of an Etch-A-Sketch.
Good for the Christmas season.
Which is really neat and fun for the Christmas season. And so we're always thinking, we're always working. But I mean, to pinpoint favorite things, I mean,
probably very tough.
It's tough because, like, you know, just like anybody, like, you know, it's the latest and greatest new toy, right? Like, you forgot about, you know, you probably forgot about an Etch-A-Sketch, right? Like, and when was the last time?
Never me.
When was the last time you held one?
Okay, the last time I held one, that's been a while.
Right?
That's
so I think you remember certain things, and, you know, it's important. The magic world here in the Hudson Valley is awesome. I have a lot of great, great friends and consultants. There's actually a magic club that a lot of people don't know about.
Really?
It's called the Society of American Magicians. Houdini was one of
Okay. I thought you meant like a Hudson Valley specific.
There is. So I'm going to tell you. So it's the Society of American Magicians, and then they have assemblies throughout the country.
Okay.
And here in Poughkeepsie, we are the Al Baker Assembly number 35.
Cool.
We meet the second Tuesday of the month at Milanese in Poughkeepsie.
Nice.
And all are welcome. It's really affordable to join. You have to join the local assembly, then you have to join nationals, but it's really affordable. And if you have any interest in magic, come. You have to be at least 18 to come. There's no young Society of American Magicians around here. But if you're interested, you can go to the SAM, Society of American Magicians website to find all that out. But come, if you like magic, join. And, you know, I heard recently you had Kevin McCurdy on. I got my
yep.
start in the haunted world at Kevin McCurdy's.
Did you?
Yeah, I worked for Kevin for a long time. I used to have a haunted house myself on Friday nights in October. During middle school and high school, and we accepted donations and then got businesses to match us.
Oh, wow.
And Kevin was always so great about helping me out. And then on nights that I wasn't doing my own, I went and volunteered with him over at his. And then eventually I started doing magic at his. And so the haunted house world and magic,
wow.
a lot of combination there.
Oh, yeah. And Kevin, such a great guy, and the stuff that they're able to put together over there.
I mean, his brain for, and I think that's part of where my, you know, obviously seeing Copperfield do these vignettes, but then going to like Kevin's Haunted House and like experiencing that, and everything is like a small little story and like the detail. And I think that's where I got it from.
Oh, big time. Yeah. He's such a good storyteller. I've been to so many haunted houses where it's just like, you're in a room, scare. You're in a room, scare.
Yeah, you're just,
but he's so good about the story aspect.
Yeah.
And I got to give you credit. When I watch your shows, even if I don't see like the story vignette, you have a great way of telling a story through the entire performance.
Yeah, I share little bits and pieces. It's all based on my life or an experience. You know, I do a thing where it's not my trick, but it's not done often, where I go fishing with a kid.
Oh,
and we go fishing at the edge of the stage, and I catch a real fish over the audience, and then the kid gets to take it home.
That's fantastic,
right?
I mean, I don't think I've seen that one.
Parents hate me. The parents hate me. I got an email the other day, and I thought it was adorable. I did a show in Tarrytown, and I got an email, and it was like, you know, the mother was so concerned after the show. Now, at the end of the show, I give you a bag to travel in, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you were to go to the fish store and get it, mm-hmm. I give you a bag, and I say, all you have to do is dump the water in, tie it, leave some air. If you're having trouble, I'll be out in the lobby at the end of the show.
Yep.
Come see me. I'll help you do it. So she was all worried, whatever. And she was like, what size tank do I need, blah, blah, blah. And like the end of her email, she wrote like an update and sent me photos, which I thought was great. They named it. And I think it's a really cool experience. I think adults first or parents first reaction is, oh no, what am I now
what
have
am
to
I getting
take
into?
A fish home. Like, yeah. Thanks, dude. Like, I really appreciate you giving me a fish. Now I got to. So it was like $100 or $200 later on Amazon. Like, because I was like, if you want the fish will live as long as, I mean, obviously it's a fish, but like the fish will live as long as you help it live.
Yeah.
So like a filter, you know, the days mm-hmm. of just a goldfish in a bowl aren't the same anymore. You need a filter. It needs to have oxygen, and it'll live a very long time. I have fish that have been retired from the show because of COVID that are ginormous, and I've had
really?
It for 5 years. I mean, I have goldfish that are this big and this fat, and they're in my tank at home. And I'm like, you're just living out retirement, guys. Like,
you're just chilling.
So like, I love that trick because I think it just leaves, you know, it's a memory and it leaves them with something. And, you know, I just always laugh because the funny thing at the end was like, I hope he lives for a long time because of his $200 it cost me to. And I was like, it's a good introduction. And then, you know, obviously if it doesn't live, it's a good conversation to have with your children.
Yeah.
And I love little stories. So like we create little stories and I love sharing. Everything's based off of truth. And yeah, it's a lot of fun.
That's beautiful. And what you're saying about like what sticks with you, what the memories are. When we saw your show at the Headless Horseman, my girlfriend and I, the very last trick that you did, the number trick.
Yeah, it's brand new.
That was it seems like a quote unquote simple trick where it's just like all these numbers and you're grabbing stuff. But like to see the wave of like, wait, holy crap, how did he just do that? Because it's so specific.
Yeah. Like to the audience.
Yeah.
To the audience. It could never be recreated in that time, which is so cool to do.
And it's not something we could do like now and then people watch it later because that's not how that works.
It wouldn't work.
Wouldn't that be crazy
that
if that worked? But it was so crazy in the moment. Like, sure, we saw your other effects, but in the bigger stunts. But the thing that my girlfriend looks at me was like, how did you do that?
Yeah.
Like, it's that last number trick where you're taking like the times or taking somebody's phone number, all these things, and then it manages to somehow be the time, not just the time, but the date that we're all there. Like, I'm sure there's a way to do it. Do not spoil it for me.
That's how I make a living. I can't say.
It's amazing. It's mind-blowing.
It is a lot of fun. We have a lot of cool things that we get to do. And like
you said that's new, huh?
It is new. Yeah. I did it a few times before to kind of like work out the kinks. But then, we hone things at Headless. And that's really why I like Headless is because we do so many shows in a season. And then I like learn tricks. And I usually like to premiere things there. So I work out the bugs and figure things out.
Yep.
And it's relatively new. I think we did it we did it a handful of times live prior to Headless season.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting a great reaction. And for me, for a long time, it's like, you know, I invest so much into these effects. And that's like, again, I'm investing.
There's no effects in that.
I am investing a lot of money into certain things. But when it's the rights to do certain tricks and whatever. And a lot of people don't really understand that concept of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, if I spend like a ton of money on something and then the reaction stinks, I'm like, what is wrong? So what I've learned over the years is like the psychological ones, like the numbers one and things like that, is like they might not clap, right? Like I think we've been trained as entertainers is like, oh, if they're having a good time, they're going to clap. I've had to teach myself now that if they're not clapping, I need to take in the moment and like whether look at their face or whatever, because they're just confused and blown away.
Yeah.
And you'll notice how I end the show, how I ended the show at Headless was I do the thing, I do the reveal, and I'm like, all right, see you later. Like,
yep.
I'm going to let that sit with you because you're going to talk about it on your ride home. You're going to be like, this is the one. And I knew that going into it. And, but it takes a long time for me to understand that, like, just because there's no reaction doesn't mean that it's not in your mind. So it's cool to hear you say what your favorites are in that sense and to know that. But yeah, we always like to end with something to leave you wanting more or something personal. So like every time we do a show, we always end with a story of some sort or a connection and a piece of the people that got to hang out with us, which is really cool.
It was such a cool piece. I'm so glad that I got to experience it that time. And I'm sure new audiences are going to love it when
I love what you said about how you've seen me. So you watch the show. It took me forever that people keep coming back to the same show. Right. And as a magician, I'll change my show and add a couple tricks here or there yearly.
Yeah.
When I do resorts, they usually want a new show, right? Because they get returners.
Yeah.
So like or they don't book you the same weekend, which is a funny thing to learn.
Yeah.
There's a saying that's like good magicians perform the same tricks for different audiences. Mm-hmm. Bad magicians or mediocre magicians perform different tricks for the same audiences, which I don't believe in that saying. I think that saying needs to go away because of the market that we're in. But like you'll come back to see the show again and just be on my side and watch the people.
Yeah.
And you said you did that. And like it took me forever because I was like, you were like these people came to the show and they were at the last show. And I was like, why are you back? And they were like, the people are new. And like, it's fun to be on your side. It's fun to see how people react to certain things.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the way it is, but like they always say, oh, the five of spades trick is always the five of spades. The trick is always going to end similar, you hope, to what it did the last time you saw it, which I think is funny that people keep coming back. But it's really rewarding to me. And I'm forever grateful that people continue to come back and see the show. And, you know, at Headless, it's outside. Yeah. Last year was a really cool moment for me that I'll never forget for as long as I live. It was pouring rain and I was like, I'm not going to do a show. No one's going to stand here. And it was sprinkling and I came out and it had started to pour right after. I usually do some sort of grand entrance or appearance or some sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it started to pour and I looked at the people and I was like, if you're willing to get wet, I'll get wet. And nobody left. And it was a packed show and we all got soaking wet together, got poured on. And I was like, wow, these people just watched somebody that they don't know for 30 minutes, got soaking wet. And I hope they had a good time, but I guess because they stayed, but it just like meant so much to me that people would sit in the rain to watch a kid that had a dream of becoming a magician do a magic show, which is really, really cool.
That is awesome. And again, we're both in entertainment, you in magic, me in music. Those moments of stillness that you can get from an audience. Sure, they may not be doing the whole standing ovation clapping, but when you can actually capture an audience and have like that pin drop effect, whether they're like paused in confusion, in wonder or in connection, whatever that is, those moments really, really hit. And here you have that moment. Here you are talking about in the rain and everything. It's like if people are literally able to weather the weather with you, that says so much.
An entertainer.
Yeah.
And like forever, like I said, like you have been, like we have been trained as humans that if we like something, we clap. And so as a young entertainer, if they're not clapping, they're not liking your show.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to come over that hurdle and just say, wait, you know, and it took, it takes a long time for me as an entertainer, right? Like I don't know what people like and how they are. Yeah. So I have people out in the audience filming and like, I'll be like, man, they didn't react to that at all when I premiere something new. And I'm like, I'll be backstage with my team and I'll be like, I wonder if we could do it differently, blah, blah, blah. And then my camera guy comes back and I'm like, hey, can I watch that back? And they're over it and you can hear the whispers of the people talking about it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, all right, maybe, hang on, maybe we don't need, let's, maybe this is a moment where they're just like, there's no way that's possible. And they don't put their hands together. Their brain doesn't tell them to clap. Their brain is like, how is that? That's magic.
Yeah.
And like, for me, it took a long time for me to get over that. It also took a long time for me to be like, when I do a trick and I'm like, how do they not know that I'm doing this? Or how can they not figure this out? It took me forever. I had like such fear of doing certain things and being caught, or there's no way that they don't figure it out.
Yeah.
Like it's so like, but I know the secret. Once you know the secret, it's ruined forever. Right. So now I do it to give back that sense of wonder to people since I know how it's all done.
Yeah.
And my team doesn't know. It's a need to know basis. A lot of times they'll come up and
a lot of your team doesn't even know.
Yeah. Cause if I don't have to spend the time with them on it, why?
Yeah.
But my lead stage hand, Shane, who is an amazing friend and he's just the greatest human being. He like was walking backstage the other day and I was presetting something and he goes, no. And I was like, what? And again, for me, it's just like second nature. He's like, that's, man. He's like, that's how it's done. And he gets so upset. And it's the truth. Once you learn how the trick is done, it stinks, man. It really does. It's not exciting. Yeah. So my crew is amazing, and I wouldn't be without like where I am without them. Yeah. My lighting guy, Jeremy Johnson, is a phenomenal lighting guy. He makes me look good. Maria, everybody in my show is phenomenal. You know, who I cut in half. She's amazing. And I can't do the show without any of the team behind me and those that have supported me throughout my entire life. Darren, Frank, just so many people that have got me to where I am. And I'm going to continue to grow. So
yes, you are. Absolutely. So Ryan, tell the fine people who are listening where they can find you.
Hello, fine people. RyanDutcher.com or search Illusionist Ryan Dutcher on social media. Follow me, become my friend, message me, let me know you listen to this. Come see a show. The 21 and up show or 18 now. We've lowered it to 18 because originally all the bars wanted it to be 21 so people would drink. But now it's 18 and up. Comedy Magic Show is a lot of fun to come to. It is not your child, you know, birthday party magic show. But I do family shows for resorts and things like that. Reach out again, RyanDutcher.com. And if you message me there, I get it. I read it as well as my team reads it. Come see a show. We're at Frosty Fest till the end of the year, and then come see us at Headless next year. It's a lot of fun. And I'm grateful for this. This is a lot of fun.
Dude, this was so much fun. And again, we'll have all the information in the description of this episode so you can follow along. You can find out where you can see shows. I've seen a handful of his shows, and funny enough, I've seen you in a number of different venues where not a lot has always been the same. So I do feel like I'm getting something fresh every single time. So I'm very grateful for that.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah. So definitely check it out
as well. I feel like I went on some tangents and I'm sorry.
It made sense to me.
Hopefully it makes sense.
I hope it makes sense.
I don't know. There's a lot going on up here and it doesn't always come out this way. But.
Well, hey, Ryan, happy holidays. Thanks, and thank you so much.
Thank
appreciate
you.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Ryan.
And as always, we're glad we get to
spend some time.
There's the radio voices right there.
And that's a wrap on this week's episode. Much love to our sponsors this week, Impact PR and Communications, MHA of Dutchess County, Locks That Rock Hair Design, Dutchess Beer Distributors, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County,
Feldman, Kleiman, Collins, and Safe LLP, Attorneys at Law,
Prime Storage,
V-Bash Med Spa and the Hudson Valley Ketamine Lounge,
Walsh Valuation, and Day Rock. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. You can support this channel by becoming a Patreon member with memberships as low as $5 a month. With that, you can get behind-the-scenes content, your name featured in the credits of each episode, and access to the Spend Some Time chat. You can find that and more by scanning the QR code on your screen or by going to the links in the description. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and I'm glad we get to spend some time.